Wish you could turn back time to the good old days before we all got stressed out with COVID and political division and other problems that are plaguing our society today. Well, it turns out pastors and church leaders aren't the only ones with wishful thinking, because millennials and post-millennials, they want to turn back time too, all the way back to how things were before the online world began. So what can the church learn from their desire for nostalgia, which has birthed a revival of Barnes & Noble and other local bookstores in America? We'll talk about that and what we can learn from it in this episode of the More Than a Pastor Show. Let's get started. Hello, my friend. Welcome to the More Than a Pastor Show. I'm Rich Avery, your host. Hey, this is where we help you take your skills, experience, and ministry know-how and leverage them into sustainable income outside the church through a business or a side hustle that's right for you so you can serve God and provide for your family no matter what. Thanks so much for joining me today. It's really great to see you. I really appreciate the time you spend with me each week. If you're new to the show, I'm especially glad to see you. And you might be wondering who in the world I am and what I'm about. Well, you can learn more about me, get the show notes for today's episode, and download some free resources that can help you grow your income and build financial security. You can get those at my website at morethanapastor.com/49 for episode 49. Do you remember way back when Amazon.com first got started and it only sold books? Well, we have to go all the way back to July 16 of 1995. That's when Amazon launched, and I was almost 25 years old. And within 10 years, Amazon became so dominant that many experts predicted that it would kill all the brick-and-mortar bookstores who just could not compete with Amazon on price. Over the years, several national bookstore chains have closed, maybe familiar names to you like Borders Books and Music, Walden Books, Family Christian Stores, along with dozens of smaller local bookstores. And then in 2006 and 2007, the e-reader revolution began with the introduction of the Sony Reader, then the Kindle, the Nook, and of course now we can read e-books on our iPad, our tablets, on our computers, and even on our phones. And experts have wondered if physical books would soon become a thing of the past, especially since millennials and post-millennials are digital natives. They've totally grown up in an online world. And then COVID happened, and bookstores and other retailers were forced to close for many months. And we all wondered, would this be the end of our friendly neighborhood bookstore? Turns out, it wasn't. Because this past Christmas season, I happened to notice that the bookstores in my community were thriving. Every time I drive past a Barnes & Noble or another local bookstore, I would see that the parking lots were pretty full all the time. Didn't matter if it was morning or night. And now it's 3 months after Christmas, and these stores are still keeping busy. In fact, one day I drove past Schuler Books, which is one of our largest local bookstore, not a nationwide chain, and I said to myself as I drove by, because the parking lot was filled, and I said, well, I guess Amazon has not killed the local bookstores yet. And then a few weeks ago, I was listening to a podcast that talked about the revival of Barnes & Noble booksellers and of other local bookstores. And I discovered some fascinating reasons why Barnes & Noble and other local stores are actually thriving today post-COVID. To be honest, these reasons surprised me. Maybe they'll surprise you too. And it's largely because of millennials and Gen Zers and their feelings for nostalgia for the good old days. Listening to that show, I began to wonder if the factors inspiring the success of these booksellers after such a tough season of decline could somehow help the church succeed and grow as well. So today I want to share four lessons the church can learn from the revival of Barnes & Noble on how to engage Gen Zers and millennials. But first, do you ever wonder what tools I'm using to build and grow my online business here, the More Than a Pastor Show? Or are you thinking of starting a website or platform or podcast, but you don't know exactly how or where to start? Then I invite you to check out my tools and resources page on my website. You'll find it at morethanapastor.com/tools, and you'll discover the exact tools and resources that I'm using and what you can use too to build and grow your own online business. Again, you'll find the tools and resources page at my website at morethanapastor.com/tools. So a couple of weeks ago, I was listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show podcast, and I heard a fascinating interview that Brian did with James Daunt, the CEO of Barnes & Noble. Daunt came to Barnes & Noble as its new CEO in 2019. Yeah, right before the pandemic began. But I was shocked to learn that he was like the fourth CEO of the company in 5 years, if I remember right. A short time into his tenure, of course, the COVID lockdowns began, and all of his stores were closed for many months. And despite the immense uncertainty that COVID brought to our country and to his company, Daunt was undaunted, and he took this season of empty stores as an opportunity to do something different. Previously, Barnes & Noble stores were pretty much cookie cutter in their layout, and the decisions on store decor, product offerings, and pricing were all decided at the corporate level. But Daunt felt that COVID gave him the opportunity to get rid of structures that had held his people and profits back. And one of the biggest financial decisions he made was to no longer take promotional money from publishers. And this is money that publishers gave to highlight or to feature certain books in certain locations within stores. The problem is not every book is popular in every community or location. Some maybe it makes sense to highlight and promote. Others maybe it doesn't. And so Daunt made the decision that he was no longer going to accept that money from publishers and no longer allow them to dictate how certain books would be displayed or for how long in any of his stores. Then he implemented what he called a hyper-local strategy, where the local store directors would be empowered to make the decisions that affected their stores. So as a part of that strategy, he gave each store director the autonomy to remake the stores in a way that better reflected the tastes of their local community. That meant they could paint the walls a different color, they could install new carpeting, they could rearrange furniture and shelving, they could do anything that would allow them to fit better into their community and make it more of an inviting and warm place for local people to come to. Previously, the corporate HQ had dictated how stores should be laid out, what products would be featured where, but now store directors were freed up to totally customize their stores and their shelf offerings, how they placed their shelves and what product they put on their shelves. And so they could get rid of books that weren't suited for their community, that weren't great sellers, and they could highlight and promote and get more of the books that their local people wanted to buy. Store directors were even given autonomy to set their own prices for the items that they sold. Well, I guess this strategy must have worked because somehow in 2021, Barnes & Noble set the record for sales of books in the United States. And in 2023, for the first time in over 10 years, Barnes & Noble will be opening new stores. Daunt believes that this the months-long pandemic lockdowns and the social distancing that time required actually sparked a revival in getting people back into bookstores. And today, Barnes & Noble is thriving, and many local community bookstores are thriving too. I was interesting to find out in listening to this interview that the bookstore revival is being driven by Gen Zers and millennials, which is interesting because they are the digital natives who have grown up in an entirely online world. But they're drawn to bookstores for the nostalgia of it. Yeah, coming to a bookstore, browsing the shelves, discovering a book or author that's new to you, sitting down to read a book a bit, maybe even buying a book, it takes them back to the good old days, to a time before the internet when everything was like a book. It was real, tangible, and holdable. Yeah, I guess I had never really thought about that before, that there's something about the physical experience of browsing the shelves and buying books in a bookstore that can't be replicated online. Yes, e-readers like Kindles or Nooks, they have their place, especially when we're traveling and we don't want to be weighed down with a bunch of heavy books, but we can have those books on our iPad or other e-reader. But people are going to continue to want physical books, Daunt says, because there's just something about holding a book, flipping through its pages, even smelling the paper, that produces an enjoyable sensory experience for us. Books are also used for decoration, and books have sentimental value. They give meaning to people. Do you have books like that? Do you have books that have sentimental value to you, or books that have special meaning in your life? Maybe because of who it was that gave you the book, or maybe you were reading it at a certain time in your life when this book was able to open up a whole new world for you or help you make sense of the world. But Gen Zers and millennials aren't just coming back to Barnes & Noble to buy books. They're coming for a pleasant third space experience, a place that's not home or not the office where they can first read, relax, or study in a peaceful environment, second, enjoy a cup of coffee, tea, or other beverage, and third, gather with others. And let me break those three down just really quickly. In the midst of a noisy and busy world, Barnes & Noble offers a peaceful environment where you can escape from the outside world and get lost in a good book. It's a great place to relax, de-stress, unwind, maybe even do some studying or even working. And similar to the sensory experience of holding a book, there's a similar experience in holding a cup, like a cup of coffee, and the aroma, the smell of coffee, and the latte art that's created often in fancy bookshops, and the taste of the premium drink that you're holding in your hand, those sorts of things that are found in a coffee shop or a bookstore, they work to create a meaningful experience and an enjoyable experience for people, but especially for the younger generations. And then lastly, local bookstores serve as great gathering places for book lovers, places where people can meet up with friends, attend book clubs, author events, and other literary gatherings. And these things can create a sense of community that's hard to replicate online. So as I listened to this interview with James Daunt, the CEO of Barnes & Noble, I couldn't help but wonder if there are any lessons the church could learn from the revival that Barnes & Noble is experiencing, and how the church might be able to tap into the millennial and post-millennial feelings for nostalgia, their desire for real connection, and their appreciation for third spaces to help foster its own revival. Because, like Barnes & Noble, the church has faced economic uncertainty, COVID lockdowns, and massive disruption that's threatened to upend the entire model. And, like Barnes & Noble, the church can offer third space types of environments for connection and community, meaningful relationships, and coffee. Now, there may be other things on your list as well. Those were just the top things that came to my mind when I thought about ways that the church is similar to Barnes & Noble in terms of what we can offer. But as I listened to this interview with James Daunt, the CEO of Barnes & Noble, I came up in my mind with four key lessons or takeaways from this interview, ways that I think the church can learn from Barnes & Noble and tap into the millennial and post-millennial desire for nostalgia. Okay, point number one was that Barnes & Noble embraced disruption as a gift and an opportunity to do something different. Pastor, I just want to ask you, are you still waiting for things to go back to how they were pre-COVID? Or have you recognized that we're not going back and that we're moving forward? And have you accepted this disruption as a gift, as hard as it's been? Maybe you're still struggling in terms of seeing your attendance come back, or maybe your giving in your church is struggling. Can you accept these things as a gift and as an opportunity to do something different? God might just want to do something different, and he has to get rid of some things before he can bring some new things to reality. Okay, lesson number two that I learned from Barnes & Noble is that they eliminated structures that were no longer working and that had held their people and profits back. And I just wonder, what structures, policies, or programs do you have in place that have been there for years, and maybe they're not working today? Maybe they don't make sense in the world we live in today. And maybe they're holding your church back from making the kind of impact that you could have. Just one example that comes to my mind is from my own denomination, the Wesleyan Church. And for decades, we had a prohibition against drinking. And so if you wanted to be a member in the Wesleyan Church, you had to sign a statement. You had to agree that you would not drink alcohol. And there's definitely biblical reasons for why we would not want people to be drunk, but it doesn't specifically say that alcohol should be prohibited. And so many people look to that and say, well, why do we have this rule that we've had for decades, and it doesn't seem to make sense? Well, these sorts of things are able to be addressed in our denomination every 4 years at our general conference. And so for decades, this question would be brought up, and then sometimes someone would get up and make an emotional appeal about why their daddy was an alcoholic, and then he got saved in the Wesleyan Church, and his life is different, and so we should always have this prohibition because he wouldn't have come to Christ, and wouldn't become a member, wouldn't become a pastor or whatever today if we didn't have that prohibition in place. And other people can make their other stories of why people are not coming to the church, they're not becoming members, they're being precluded from leadership because we have this rule that you have to abstain from alcohol. And so things can be intense in these debates and stuff, but the problem is it comes up every 4 years, and there's a time limit to how these things are discussed, and then they get sent to a committee to study it or whatever. And so Are these unnecessary structures that make it impossible to try to make a change and to try to have reasoned conversation about something because we have a structure that is meant to perpetuate and to keep this going? Now, in 2016, our denomination was able to make a change and to change our membership commitment so that members no longer have to abstain from alcohol, but still those in leadership still have to. I just raise that as a point. I'm not complaining about it. Like myself, I don't care to drink alcohol myself, so it's not an issue for me. But I can see how it can become a stumbling block and an issue for so many people, and how it's making it harder for many churches to find leaders and to keep pastors or to add pastors from other denominations who are used to enjoying a little alcohol every now and then. Third thing I observed is that they empowered local decision makers to make changes that worked best for their community. So my question for you is, are you holding on to decisions that others could make? And a follow-up question, are you holding on to decisions that others should make? I think that's a great question that each of us as leaders can ask. Are we holding on to the decisions because we have a certain preference or certain way things need to be done? Or are we open to letting others make those decisions? Are we open to giving others the opportunity to cut their teeth, to get their feet wet, to learn how something works, to be able to make decisions? And they may not be as great as us. They may make mistakes, but If we never give them that opportunity, they're never going to take these steps to grow. And so I wonder, are we holding back sometimes? Are with millennials and Gen Zers, they want to participate more in leadership. They want to have more of a say in how organizations are run. Because if they're going to be involved in the church, they want to have more leadership and more input into that. But are we willing to share that leadership? Or do we have things in place that keep them from being engaged in leadership? The fourth thing I've observed was that Barnes & Noble earned the trust of millennials and Gen Zers by tapping into their feelings for nostalgia and their desire for real connection and their appreciation for third spaces. So my question is, do you know any millennials or Gen Zers in your congregation, and do you know what they're looking for? Have you had conversations with them? Do you have your fingers on the pulse of what's important to them? And are you able to adapt or pivot in some ways to help tap into the passions, the interests that they have? If not, I think it's important to start to have these conversations. And then you could explore and ask them for their input and their help. What are some things that we could tweak? Or maybe what are some things that we're already doing that we can tweak? Or are there things we ought to start doing that could help make us a more inviting place, that can help tap into that feeling for nostalgia, their desire for connection, and their appreciation for the third space? Now, I just came up with a list of a couple of ideas to maybe get you started in your thinking. And I think some of these ideas could even create alternative streams of income for your church. These could be as simple as events like a dodgeball league, a monthly game night, a book discussion club, a hobby club, a side hustle startup club. I've talked about that previously on the show, how to help people in your community that are wanting to start their own business or side hustle, be able to invite them to come and network together and maybe learn from a speaker, or even have like incubator space where they could launch their business in your building. Is there a play, like creating a play place for kids? Some churches are creating playgrounds, indoor and outdoor places like that for families to come and hang out, and the church can engage with them. What about a dog park? This is a new idea I just came up with. That's a need in some communities. Most churches have a lot of space. You could fence off an area, create a nice dog park. There's community. If you've never been, there's community being built there every day at all times of the day with dog moms and dads bringing their dogs. Maybe hosting fitness classes, cooking classes. Every church has a kitchen, right? Family fun nights, things like that. So it doesn't have to be a huge thing, but are there things you can do or things you can tweak that can help engage younger generations and tap into their feeling for nostalgia, for their desire for meaningful, deep relationships and conversations, and their desire to have that third space connecting point? But unfortunately, the problem that we have with younger generations, and not just them, for every generation there are people that feel this way. The problem is that our culture no longer sees the church as being trustworthy because of so many wrongs or abuses or things from the past. And I've enumerated those in previous episodes. I'm not going to do that today. You can definitely check those out. But the problem is, no matter what we offer to people in our community, if they don't trust us or see our church as being relevant, they're not going to come. So we need to begin to show up differently in our communities and look for ways that we can build trust, to build bridges and build relationships in a way that help us to be seen as a trusted partner in our community, as a place where people want to come and connect and belong. People today want real connection and community, but they want it without feeling judgmental. They want it without feeling judged or condemned. And maybe it's not just for them and something going on in their life, but it's for their friends. And I found that with so many young people in the church today, they want a place where their friends will feel safe, where their friends feel like they belong, where their friends feel like they won't be judged. And I think that's just a critical issue for the church right now, maybe now more than ever, to express the love of Christ, the compassion of Christ, the acceptance that Christ had for all people without giving them feelings of judgment, that they're judged, that they're condemned, that they're seen as being less than because of what they're involved in or where they've been or what they've done or who they are. Jesus was able to engage with the most broken of people without causing them to feel judged or condemned. And in fact, we might say that his methods sparked a revival that turned the world upside down. Maybe, just maybe, we can too. I'd love to get your feedback on this, and we can discuss it over on my More Than a Pastor community on Facebook. If you're not a member yet, you can join for free. I've got an easy link. Go to morethanapastor.com/Facebook. Just click to join. And then would love to get your feedback on this episode. And maybe you've got some ideas. Maybe you have some pushback. Maybe you want to discuss it. That would be a great place to do it. And if you haven't joined the Facebook community yet, I would encourage you to go ahead and do that today. Also, if you know of someone who might be interested in this podcast or specifically this episode, would you do me a favor and share it with them? That would be a big help for me and help us to be able to spread the word on our More Than a Pastor show and community. Well, that's it for today's show. Before we go, could you do me another favor and hit like, share, or subscribe if you haven't already done so? Also, what topics would you like to see me cover on a future episode? Please let me know. Until next time, remember that you are more than a pastor. Saying yes to God's call doesn't mean you have to say yes to feeling stuck, broke, or unfulfilled in your life and ministry. Let's work together and help you create the life, impact, and income that you were made for.